Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson. How are things?
Good. Tell me about your travels lately.
Oh, about 2 weeks ago, I was at the Calvary Chapel Missions Conference in Marietta.
Wasn't Ed Stetzer there?
Yes, he was. Ed Stetzer was there. Ed is always good. I've been at a couple of different conferences and actually met him one time.
Okay.
He's always good. I mean, the guy's just brilliant and he's so articulate. And, you know, to have a guy of that caliber sort of give some thumbs up to what Calvary Chapel is doing globally is really cool. I think it's good for the Calvary Chapel group of churches. That went well. And I was blessed with the opportunity to do a workshop at that conference on businesses' missions, sort of introducing that concept to, which is a fairly new concept within the Calvary Chapel group of churches.
Right on.
Good. Got some good feedback from that. And then last week, actually just yesterday, I returned from a conference with Southern Baptists in New Orleans. And that was, I didn't do a workshop, but had a lot of meetings with a lot of the churches that we serve, kind of got a handle on where things are at with the IMB. In fact, got to listen to a session where the first session was actually the new president of the International Missions Board, the guy that just replaced David Platt. It was a great conference. And man, there's just things going on, you know, at a number of different levels that Southern Baptists are doing around the world. And God's given us as a ministry the privilege of, you know, being a part of a lot of those and serving those churches. So that was great. It was really tiring, but a really good last 2 weeks. Yeah. And it kind of dovetails with, you know, especially both conferences, but particularly this one where you're coming from Calvary Chapel, which is sort of, you know, hey, you can do this. Let's send our people to the world somewhat as quickly as possible. And the pre-field screening and stuff isn't, you know, hasn't been fine-tuned,
right?
Versus the conference last week where these Southern Baptist churches have, like, it's a process, it's a journey, the right. Assessment and the vetting process is well thought out, well orchestrated, goes over a long period of time. So it kind of dovetails into, you know, what we're talking about in the second part of this little series on, you know, is God calling me to be a missionary?
How long has the IMB been sending missionaries to the field?
Oh, man, I don't even have the answer to that. More than 100 years. Oh, absolutely. And they were, you know, the largest missions sending entity, you know, in the world for quite a while. They used to have, I think at their peak, they had close to 6,000 people around the world. Now they're down to less than 4,000, but working in more strategic places, you know, for finishing the end game of the Great Commission. In other words, they know how to do it, but they have a unique way of doing it. You know, they do it as the IMB, the International Missions Board, is the sending agency of the Southern Baptist Convention, which has almost 45,000 churches.
Wow, that's a huge number.
It's a unique model that they have, and it's not duplicatable for most churches.
While Calvary, on the other hand, is, you know, still kind of first generation.
Definitely first generation in missions and nowhere near the coordination or the unity as a group of churches, that not even close to what you see in the Southern Baptists or other churches.
Nonetheless, the missions footprint that Calvary has is significant.
It's significant in comparison to a lot of others, but not so compared to what's going on through the IMB and some of these other organizations. So
interesting. Well, it's cool that Shepherd Staff has relationships with both groups.
Yeah, it does. And God's blessed us, you know, where our, you know, what we do is helpful for both. It's kind of like I was telling a guy last week, both at the Calvary Conference and at the Southern Baptist Conference, that, you know, we're with like Calvary Chapels, what we do is sort of, we help them build from the ground floor up. How do you get your people that you've exposed to cross-cultural missions? How do you get them to the field? And we help them, you know, do that from the ground floor up, versus the Southern Baptist churches we work with. They've already been doing it. So we sometimes help them deconstruct some of the mindsets and things the way they have been doing it strictly through IMB, and then actually help them fine-tune what they've already been doing for Ascending Direct, and that's our niche, is we help all churches, whatever churches we work with, we're helping them to send direct to the field rather than through the traditional agency or IMB model.
I'm just impressed and blessed to hear that there's relationships that are strong in both groups and other groups too.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. God's blessed us exceedingly abundantly beyond, you know, what I originally envisioned when we started on this journey. So it's been really cool.
So what's on your mind today?
You know, I was thinking about our last conversation. We talked about, you know, if somebody's sensing the call of God to go to the field, the role of them in their local church. And so, you know, you and I talked about it. In fact, you wrote that blog post about the role of community, your local, particularly your local church community, in confirming your calling and so forth. And I was thinking about this week, and again, I guess more as a result of last week with the Calvary Chapel people, where you have people that have just been on short-term trips. They're from churches that don't have a history. And then they come and they say, okay, I think God's calling me to go to the mission field. Maybe it'd be good to do a podcast on, well, what do you tell somebody? You know, what would I normally tell somebody like that?
And your role would be a guy that has experience on the field or as a senior pastor or an elder in a church. I mean, what hat are you wearing in this conversation?
Well, actually, I'm probably wearing all of those.
All of the above.
And what I'm speaking is drawing from all of those, because I've been the guy that felt the call to go, had it confirmed, went to the field, hosted a lot of short-term teams that provoked people to think they were called to go, then pastored here in the United States, had to, as the pastor, determine, does this guy really have a calling to go? How do we discover that? What am I looking for as a pastor in this person that says they're called to go? And then how do we send them if that calling is confirmed?
Give me a scenario. Somebody comes up to you, and what questions have they asked or what statements are they making?
Well, usually what they're saying is, they basically say, look, God has been moving on my heart for years to be a missionary in this country. Or they say, you know, I took a short-term trip to Southeast Asia or Africa or Central America recently, and while I was there, you know, he really moved me to consider the idea that maybe he's calling me to be a missionary. But I don't know, what should I do with that? How do I know if he's calling me to that? So that's kind of what, and honestly, that's kind of the calls that I get all the time, or actually face-to-face conversations, because I'm sort of in the loop as a missions guy that people are fairly new in missions. They tell their people, well, call Jeff and talk to him, and he'll give you some angles that you probably haven't heard yet.
Do you feel like you're vetting them? Are you provoking them to ask themselves some questions?
Yeah, no, I'm not vetting them for sure. I'm a provoker. I want to get them. And that's kind of what I was thinking for today's podcast is, I could kind of share some of the things that I share with people to provoke them to think, look, if you really are, if God really is calling you down this path, well, like we talked about last time, your role in your local church, their role in your calling, their confirmation, those three things that we talked about in the last podcast need to be there. But here's some things that I've observed over the years are in everybody's life. Almost everybody that actually goes and is successful has these key indicators going on in their life.
Well, let's unpack those.
Well, I guess the first thing, you know, that I tell people is I kind of fan the flames of what's already there, in the sense that if the people that go and actually make a difference for God's kingdom around the world, they have a God-generated passion to be part of his global purposes. In other words, usually if they've been on a short-term trip, there's a spark of that, or maybe it was just they wanted an adventure or an experience, which is, you know, God uses even that. But all people that are called, they have to have an awareness, and it should be an observable by others awareness that there's a God-given passion to play a role in what he's doing around the world.
Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
That heart of adventure, that I guess when I started going to the field, the word that was super popular at the time was extreme this, extreme that, you know? And
yeah.
and for me, I felt like I was in my life, I was called to youth ministry, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard of what one guy was doing that I thought was extreme in a in a really crazy part of the world, and it had kind of a military emphasis, and it was like, wow, now missions has my attention. But then, I mean, that just opened my, it's like that scene in Wizard of Oz where it's in black and white, and then all of a sudden it's in color. And that's kind of what the experience was for me, is that my eyes became open to missions. And then I went to Mexico missions training and really started tracking with the missionary God narrative, and it's just given me a whole new framework. But that was kind of the first step. And but for me, I needed to have that adventure. I mean, honestly, I wanted to have some bragging rights. Is that so wrong? I mean, I wanted to be able to really, really tell compelling stories about what God is doing around the world and then be part of that. Is that just my own pride, or is that something God put in me?
I think it's something that God put in you that was then, you know, seized by pride, by your pride.
Because, interesting.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because I think if you really know the Lord, right, the Holy Spirit is in you and your passion is to glorify God. To live in such a way and do things in such a way that the awesomeness of your God is unveiled and revealed to others. So I think any born again person that's truly got the Spirit of God in them, that's going to do that. The challenge is our old man, our sin nature says, okay, I want to do that. I'm going to make this about me first. And so then the experience becomes more important than actually accomplishing that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, and again, this is my take on it. And after my own personal experiences and a lot of years of ministry and my understanding of God and his word. But what I've seen is it's kind of like my, you know, that you and I have talked about before when we talk about sort of theology of missions, like including me, when I went to the field, my motivation was primarily the lostness of people that are dying, going to hell. That got me to the field. But that never keeps you on the field because the task is too large. There's too many people. Too many of them aren't really interested in the message. So it'll get you to the field, but it won't keep you on the field. At some point, you realize you're there because God's worthy for these people to be known, to be known by. And so you stay there, not because you're making this great impact. You stay there because that's where he's told you to go and to represent him. So I think in the same way, the initial call, sense of like God's calling me to be a missionary, you know, that may be the thing that God uses that, and Americans are wired for. I want an extreme experiential adventure, cutting edge. I think God uses that to ignite the flame. But quickly, again, if the Holy Spirit is really the one generating it, it'll morph into the real issue. And the real issue is, yeah, hey, God has an in-game plan that I can be part of. And here's the key thing, I think, that I tell people that are coming at me with that kind of questioning is you can still participate in his in-game purposes, his global purposes, if you're not called to go. So if you say the only way that I can, you know, have fulfillment is if I answer what I think is his call to be a missionary and go to another country, that's the only way, then that immediately tells me you're probably not called to go. At this point in time, because if you really have his glory among the nations in mind, you'll say, okay, Lord, where can I best serve that purpose? And that best location may be here, sending others, supporting others, caring for others, visiting others, promoting what they're doing around the world. And if that's not even on your radar screen, then that's a pretty good indicator. This probably isn't God giving you the calling to missions.
Well, that's wise stuff.
Yeah. So I think like anything else, you know, God uses again, we Americans are uniquely, you know, susceptible to experiences and we have the money that most of the rest of the people around the world don't have to fly to another part of the world and get into a completely different cross-cultural context that seems extreme. We have the ability to do that. Most of the world doesn't. So what we're looking for in this person that really does have a calling is, okay, you've seized that privilege that God's given you, but why did he give you that privilege? Is it specifically for you to go, or is it specifically for you to send and care? And if the calling is to go, then there's going to be these other indicators in your life too. So does that make sense?
Totally.
So when I say, I tell this person, look, you know, the people that are truly called to go, everybody's called to participate. Those that are called to go have a God-generated passion to participate at any level, but now they're sensing that their role in what God's doing around the world may be to go. But if it's not God-generated and they can't explain that it's God-generated in some way, then again, it's like, okay, maybe you need to cool your jets for a little while and let's keep talking.
And it's good too that you give people a framework to think that through, especially if they journal or do anything like that. You know, that just that exercise of writing it out, you know, helps you process that.
And it gets back to, you know, I think you and I have talked about this before, and there's the big, like, there's a thing on YouTube called the why. And I think when it comes to the call to the mission field, that's a big issue. It's not the what or the how that's most important or the where. The question is why.
Are you talking about the Simon Sinek?
Simon Sinek.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. So what's your why is kind of a theme that's really common today. And I think for the person that feels called to be a missionary, I mean, that's a question they need to answer. Why? Well, why is God calling you to be a missionary? Mm-hmm. Why are missionaries needed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and get them to think along those lines. So that's the first thing. And then
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because a lot of times we as Christians are kind of trained not to ask why.
Exactly.
It's almost like rebellious, you know. I mean, seriously, I've heard guys, high profile guys say, you know, you don't ask questions, you know, isn't that how Satan talked to Adam or Eve, you know, asking them a bunch of questions, and they use that.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though, you know, you look at Jesus' ministry and like literally 40% of everything he said was a question.
Yeah. Every question he answered the questions with a question.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, so then the second thing, which, and again, you know, I tell them, and this ties in even more to last week, is like, look, people that are really called to go, they're an integral part of their local church.
Yeah.
They don't just go to church. They're an integral part of their local church. So where are you serving in your church? If you just go on a Sunday morning, or you go to the Sunday morning and Wednesday night, then, you know, at this point, that's not a good indicator that God's called you to go. So where are you serving in your church? How deep are the relationships you have with your fellow church members? How many people in the church know you have an interest in going? How many people in your church that we would talk to that if I asked them, hey, tell me about you. What would they tell me about you? So they need to be an integral part of their local church. That's a clear indicator too of somebody that's called to go. And so in this, you know, in this conversation that I'm having with that, that provokes that person to think also. If I called your home church leadership, if it's a big church, you know, whatever, are you serving there? What do the people you serve alongside think about you?
Yeah, it's one of the toughest things for, you know, I don't want to pigeonhole anybody or paint with a broad brush, but, you know, missionary types are very individualistic. They get things done. They are creative. They're adaptable. That's a strength. But the weak side of that is, you know, church isn't enough sometimes.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it goes back to what you said. It's not about the individual. It's about what the individual brings to the community.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, then the other thing, and this is, again, you know, I'm sure this is, I didn't know you until you were already interested in missions, but I'm sure you manifested this as I did, as everybody else I know. An indicator in somebody to me that God really is calling them, they have an unquenchable thirst for anything missions related.
Mm.
In other words, they're reading missionary biographies. They discover that the guy at the gas station is from another country. When missionaries come to visit their church, they want to go have coffee with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like anything. This an indicator to me is somebody who's globally minded. In the old days, the terminology was a world Christian, not a worldly Christian, but world Christians. And there's you know, there was this big push to turn American Christians into, quote, world Christians. You know, so like in my case, like I get home from my trip yesterday and I'm still one of the old school guys that I read the local newspaper. And the local newspaper has just one small section of international news. So most people that are called to go, you know, their first place they're going to, I go when I read my local newspaper is the international section, you know? Yeah. So there's going to be this unquenchable thirst for anything related to God's glory going to the nations and what's going on around the world and how that affects his kingdom. Like, you know, what's going on in Venezuela. There was the big news from Venezuela yesterday about maybe the head of their National Assembly trying to overthrow the president from the recent election, you know, where you're caring about what's going on around the world.
Yeah. You know, the thing that was striking for me is the biographies. Mm-hmm. And I've always, ever since I was a little kid, just loved biographies, whether it was about a modern sports star. You know, I just loved to read the stories of people. And then once I became a missionary, man, I could not get enough of it.
Yes.
And, you know, one of my go-to books is From Jerusalem to Irian Jaya.
Right.
I love that book.
Yes.
And as you study missions, the history of missions, you realize that you're actually reading the history of the church.
Right.
And that church history and missions history is intertwined.
That's right.
And there's so much that, you know, you talk about being a world Christian, but then also realizing that everything that we do, you know, originated with somebody having a heart to cross boundaries, to go into different ethnic areas, to cross oceans.
Right.
You know, just about everything that we know in the modern world is because missionaries went out to bring the gospel.
Yes.
I mean, we have not learned that enough in modern church. I mean, everything's about what's happening today.
Right.
And there is such a heritage of missions in the church. I mean, this is an issue I can't get away from and I constantly think about. And it's probably the favorite thing for me about being a Christian is that we have this heritage of missions that has got us to where we are.
Yeah. And again, so this person that is sensing God's call to be a missionary, you know, they will, one of the key indicators that that's actually him calling is they're going to want to know those kind of things. All the stuff you just described, they're going to want to know those things. And, you know, really what it is like, you know, the book of Acts ends with chapter 28. Well, mm-hmm. It's the missionary biographies that are Acts 29.
Right.
That tell the, you know, that actually tell the rest of the story right up to today.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I love the old school, the band, the Newsboys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they had that one album. I think the album was called Go. And they have a song about that, you know, Patrick saving the Irish nation, William Carey's expectation, lambs and lawyers sent to the ends of the earth. I can't remember the exact song, but basically it's a song about, you know, what God's doing today, but it's couched in the terms of, hey, there's a legacy before us and we're riding on the backs and the coattails and standing on the shoulders of those that came before.
What's the name of the song?
I can't remember the name of the song.
Well, I'll look it up. I'll look it up so we could add it to the notes. They do have some very, very thought-provoking gospel lyric.
The album is called Go. It's from 2006. And I want to say that's the name of the song, Go.
Their words are profound, actually. So
they are. They anyway, are. So. Absolutely. Yeah, sidetracked there. So then another thing is, and again, it kind of, these tie together. They're not clear. But to me, if God's calling you to go somewhere, truly calling you to go somewhere, then you're going to want to find out who he's brought into your local neighborhood from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, called people usually, almost always have a desire to find out what's the ethnic makeup of their own community.
Mm.
They want to know, you know, hey, and like I said, so when they go to the gas station, like I'm looking out the window of my office right now at a gas station where the owners and the people who work there are from Bangladesh, you know, they're Muslims. And the next corner up is the 7-Eleven where I go for my coffee sometimes and they're Sikhs that own it. And then across the street is a restaurant, a breakfast and lunch restaurant owned by an Iranian Muslim. So to me, if you say, hey, here's a person that's sensing their call to go to be a missionary, and that doesn't translate into them wanting to know, hey, is there people maybe from that country in my own neighborhood? What is the world that God's brought into my own neighborhood? If that's not there, again, I'm not really sure where the calling's at in its progression.
And I don't know that it enters the mind of people as they're thinking through the excitement of a short-term trip.
I'm sure that they don't. It's, in fact, most of them don't. As when I bring this stuff up, it's like eyebrow raised kind of moments.
Yeah.
And then, but you can see a lot of times when the eyebrows go up, you can see, you know, they're convicted. Like, yeah, uh-huh. You know, maybe I should start doing that. And
yeah.
And in fact, you know, when I was pastoring, I actually, some of the stuff we developed, you know, you had to be part of some kind of cross-cultural ministry locally. Yeah. If you were going to be part of some of the things we were doing. And then go with what easily slips into that, into all these things is, hey, is this person that's called to go, are they praying? You know, since you went on the trip, you know, what's your prayer life? How's it changed since you were out there? What are you praying for? Who are you praying for? How has your personal interaction with God changed since you were on the field? And how does that impact what you're sensing him calling you to do right now? And again, the prayer is going to be on a global scale. If maybe, you know, prior to the trip, you prayed for your mom and dad every day, which you should, your wife, your kids, your neighborhood or whatever. But if your prayers aren't going global, especially after you've been on a trip or now you feel God's calling you to go, if your only prayer is, God, please send me, are you calling me to go? If your prayer stops at, you know, you going, and it just stays there, but you're not praying for the place you're called to go, maybe, well, there's something wrong in that picture.
I have been so convicted lately of how important prayer is. And prayer has always been a part of my Christian walk, but it just, you know, I try to wrap my brain around what Paul meant when he says, pray without ceasing.
Mm-hmm.
And just how much, you know, praying person's faith is elevated. Then their conversation is transformed, and their attitude is and temperament is tempered.
Yeah. And I'm convicted too. And I mean, there's seasons where my prayer time has been intense, real, you know, all of the things. And then you go into seasons where it's not.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it's because you're too busy, you know? Well, I mean, we could get into a whole thing on that. We don't want to do that, but anyway, you can't emphasize
prayer enough. You just can't.
No, you can't. And again, just asking those kind of questions. Okay, you were on the trip, or for whatever reason, you're sensing God's call to go. Since this was happening, started happening, how has your prayer life changed?
Yeah.
How did it look then? How does it look now?
Great question. What's the content
of your prayer? What's the content? Who are you praying for?
Mm.
You know, those are all things that I think they're, again, clear indicators of somebody that's actually called to go.
And I'm one of those guys that just, I'm always challenging, and maybe it's just because I love to write, but, you know, are you writing this stuff down? Are you tracking this? Are you putting a date on it? You know, and do you have enough entries in your journal about this? And is this a real indicator of your prayer life? You know,
right.
That's just kind of how it works with me. And I feel like, man, just think of all the prayers that are written down in the Bible. I think it's so biblical to make that a practice. So anyway, I know that you have a couple of more that you want to hit.
Yeah, and we can hit these quickly. The other thing, and again, sometimes, you know, well, you know me, Brian, so you know, I'll say things provocatively, intentionally sometimes. I'll tell, it's usually before I do it, I'll tell people, look, I'm about to poke you in the eye, so I'm just going to give you a warning.
Ouch.
Okay?
Fasten your seatbelt.
fasten your seatbelt. Or I'm going to give you a gut punch here, so tighten your stomach muscles. But I think people that are called to go, they joyfully and freely give financially to what God's doing around the world. So like, look, if you're not giving financially over and above your tithe to your local church to somebody that's working in the country where you feel called to go or other global missions endeavors, I'm not really sure you're ready yet. Because if you are called to go, you're going to be dependent on the giving of other believers. Well, why should God send you out dependent on the giving of other believers when you're not participating in your own financial giving and what he's doing through other people? And then if they give me any pushback, I say, cover your other eye because you, if you went on a short-term trip, you just spent $1,000 or $2,000 that you could have sent to somebody on the field.
Ouch.
So don't tell me you don't have the ability to raise money or to give money because you expended money to get yourself over there on that trip. So,
and I'm so proud of my son because he's been on the mission fields in a handful of places, and him and his wife, part of their budget is set aside for missionaries, and he cannot, you know, it's kind of like, okay, who are we going to pick next?
Right.
You know, and it's just a habit. It's something that he brought into his marriage, and it just comes from, you know, having been there and having a love for the people that are doing, you know, what he's done, maybe what he wants to do, but that's something that's his piece of it. He has that global mindedness, all those things that you described, but knows that God has him in a job here and is blessing him that way. And so he wants to bless others that don't have that opportunity, but he does it with an excitement. And it's almost like, I can't wait to bless these people. It's going to be so awesome.
Right.
That's his attitude.
Yeah. And that makes a difference. You know, you've been there on the receiving end. I've been on the receiving end. Those kind of people, man, are just... So again, you know, hey, if you're thinking God's calling you to be a missionary and you're going to step into total dependence on him supplying your needs through the finances of other people, but you're not willing to use your own money that he's blessed you with for anything other than your own purposes to take a trip and be exposed and whatever, then there's, you know, there's something that needs to be reoriented there too. And then the last thing, you know, is, and this is kind of a, it's kind of, to me, it's a no-brainer, but the reality of it is people that are called to go, they build relationships with unbelievers here.
Yep.
Again, you're not going to do over there what you're not doing here. So if you're not sharing your faith locally, if you don't have meaningful relationships with unbelievers here, and representing Jesus to them and your relationships with them, then again, you need to look at that because again, the idea is most of what most people are going to do overseas is going to be at some level, it's going to be relationship building with people that are unbelievers.
Mm-hmm.
So how would we expect you to do over there what is not observable and present in your life here?
And it's not so much about, you know, notches in your belt.
No.
It's about really genuinely talking to people about God. Everybody thinks about God. Everybody wants to, you know, somehow to be connected with God and be okay with God. And we're the doorway for that, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are. And that's, you know, the terminology now that I keep hearing, especially among the Southern Baptist churches that we work with, and even larger than that, is what they call gospel conversations.
Oh.
You know, you're building relationships with people, you work, your coworkers, your neighbors, they're unbelievers. You know, are you having gospel? You have relationships with them, but do you have gospel conversations with them?
Yeah.
Not, did you preach the gospel to them? Did you give them a sinner's prayer, you know, or whatever, like the old days, evangelism explosion kind of stuff. But gospel, you know, conversations as part of your relationship that have to do with unpacking the truths of who God is, what the gospel is, and so forth.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that, and I think one of the downsides of some of those programs, which I think are good because they give you a roadmap.
Right.
I think the downside of it is that you don't really, God doesn't seem super real to you until you're trying to win a soul.
Exactly.
But I mean, God needs to be real to you, like when it's just you and God.
Right.
So that you're able to communicate about this person you know because you know him.
Right.
You know, I think that's where some of those shrink wrapped programs, you know, fall short, is we get on a talk track, but then when we don't have a talk track, we don't know God.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
Mm.
And again, that's part of our culture. We've turned what is really a relationship with the Creator, that fact that we could have a personal interactive relationship with our Creator, despite our rejection and rebellion and hatred towards him, but through Jesus, we can have this renewed relationship. We tend to spin everything into succinct propositional truth statements.
Right.
And it's like we're selling a product rather than introducing them to somebody we know. And I like to put it in the context of, look, you can't hang out with me for very long without me talking about my wife.
Right.
And I don't give you propositional truths about her. I tell you what she's like and what I know about her and how we interact with one another. And I have a thought, I'd love you to meet my wife.
Yeah.
And you would like meeting my wife, but we take it out of that relational realm and tend to put it into this abstract, conceptual, propositional truth realm. And the mission field, that doesn't work.
Not mission at all.
All about the relationship realm, the atmosphere of relationships.
Yeah.
So.
And it's getting to be more like that in our culture as well.
It is. It's changing. And I think that's a good thing. So anyway, those are the things that, you know, I've been thinking through because I get literally I've had 300 people minimum, I'd say, come and talk to me, you know, or get directed to me by other people that sense they're being called to be a missionary. And so some of what we've shared in this podcast and the previous one are some of the things that I say to them.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.